This week on The Design Review, we talk about how ethics is good business.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about ethics, but John, you are going to be giving a talk, actually. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'll be giving a talk in about a week from now. So if you're listening to this on the day it came out, it'll probably be the weekend of. And we it's about design ethics, the whole conference. And this is something that's really been on my mind ever since I wrote my book, Tragic Design, how do we position ethics within the company? You know, oftentimes, you know, especially early on in my career and in between, it was really about like, okay, I see something that I think we should change, connected to ethics. Like, hey, I don't think this is fair to users. And I'm trying to convince everybody not to do that thing.
Yeah.
And there's and that's good, right? That's still good.
Yeah.
But I think there's more. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today. I think there's this whole other perspective to take that really puts ethics in the driver's seat versus on the defensive.
Yeah. Cool. That sounds interesting. So
let's do a quick story here. I think where ethics really started on like got on my radar was really early on in my career. I was asked to implement a dark pattern where it was like, you know, try it free. It's only going to be like X dollars a month, free for 30 days, something like that. And at the end of those 30 days, you know, by the way, we're automatically going to charge you for a year. And it's not, you know, it's not actually that much per month. I mean, it is when you divide it by 12, but also like we're automatically going to charge you. And it was just, it didn't feel right to me. Like I felt like we were really trying to sneak it in versus the person thought we had that much value. And it launched. I tried my best to defend this and, you know, I wasn't able to convince the VPs that this should be changed. And so it went live. And of course, you know, the revenue spikes. Oh, wow. You know, we did great. So many people signed up for a year subscription all of a sudden. But, you know, I really pushed hard. And I figured that, okay, you know, I can convince them, right? And originally, before this, my argument, the one that failed to the VPs was, hey, we shouldn't do this because it tricks people.
Right, yeah.
And they sort of interpret that as like, okay, one is, okay, you're telling me what not to do, but that doesn't like add any kind of replacement for me. So I'm left with choosing nothing or choosing what we're doing now. And so as a kind of a human mental model, we don't like to choose nothing. Like we like to have something, right? So if you just say, if your argument is don't do this, even if they feel like yes, it's a lot harder to say yes to something that's a negative. Like don't do this. Yeah. So then it feels like we're not doing it. Especially somebody who's in the business, they're always like, you know, do minded, right? Because that's what gets the needle moving. The second thing is that saying it tricks people and explaining how it's a dark pattern almost carries a blame or like ascribes blame to the person who came up with it, right? That might not have been their intention, but now they almost need to accept that they're the kind of person who does that by, you know, when you say that, right? Like, okay, it's trickery. It's like a dark pattern. It's very unethical. It almost becomes an attack on their character, right? So saying like, hey, we shouldn't do this. I think it tricks people. Like it's not a good position. It might still be true, but when we're dealing with humans, like we react to things different ways that aren't always like, you know, logical, right? I'm guilty of this too. I'm not a human. This is the way it's perceived. And so we need to just take our minds off of this. And And to continue that story, what I ended up doing was really focusing on supporting it with data and things like that, which I think is still really good. And we've talked about this I've talked about that example many times on this show. On, you know, I created a case for why it doesn't perform well, essentially, like the real mm-hmm. metrics, which was our cancellations were going up, the chargebacks were going up, the customer support bills were going up, and the number of people complaining about our service on, you know, social and stuff was going up. So it was actually like a moved cost, which oftentimes dark patterns just measure the wrong thing at the wrong period, at the wrong like moment in time. Yeah. Which this is all true. This is all good. This is still valid. My book, the things in the book are still valid. Those are still valid. But there's a whole other approach to ethics that can really start to shift the discussion within a company from like a reactionary defensive, like, please don't, you know, harm people. Please do not implement, you know, things that are trickery, to something where like, hey, let's pursue ethics. Let's integrate that as part of our business strategy. And so that is what we're going to like really dig into today.
So here's the question, right? Is like, they probably saw, as you mentioned, they probably saw growth in revenue, right? So like they put this out there, subscription revenue went up, it went crazy, right? Because people were basically being charged without realizing they're being charged for a year's worth of subscriptions, right? But from their perspective, they're looking at probably the numbers going up and going, hey, this thing worked really well. Mm-hmm. And so how do you convey this problem of the cost being moved, basically? Or
I think we'll get into that.
Okay.
because I mean, it's really just understanding how to measure things better. And a lot of times, like the manager level, or even like maybe the level right above them at like a larger company, they're the ones who measure dark patterns and things that, and think it works.
Yes.
Actually, like the top level, like CEO, they're the ones who care most about long-term growth, because that's where they're measured, right? Like that's where their promotions come from, you know, quote unquote, their bonuses and stuff come from, is like they're interested in creating a company that is a big engine for growth. The people on the ground are generally more focused on what are we doing this quarter? You know, like the tenure at startups and tech companies is generally like 1 to 2 years. So they're really looking about like, what are we going to launch? And then I'm probably going to be going to another company and saying how awesome that launch was. So, oftentimes we can escalate it up and figure out what the right metrics are that really drive medium to long-term growth. So like, In the short-term sampling, dark patterns generally work, but it's that medium to long-term where it catches up with you. And we'll get into that. Yeah. Okay. So, I think this is really important distinction to make right off the bat, is ethical design is not taking options off the table. Hey, let's not do these things. Let's kind of fight with one arm behind our back, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we'll choose to do less because it's the right thing to do. It's not that. It's not just like protection from getting sued. those lawsuits will catch up to you. And sometimes they don't, depending on the government and the laws, they might not like fully, provide justice for the injustice you've been created over time. And then it's not just like a nice thing to do. It's not like, hey, we want to, do the right thing in the world, and this is why we choose to do it. It's not just those things, right? Like it still is the nice thing to do. It's still the right thing to do. It still protects you from lawsuits, and it still sometimes limits the things that you do. But that's not where our perspective should be at all. So let's take an example of, let's say you own a sushi restaurant. I love sushi. I think about sushi every week, so I couldn't think of another example without getting hungry and buying sushi. your customers come and they are happy with the service. You've kind of launched. You're in a good spot. Just think of like any sushi restaurant you've ever been to. Now imagine the business owner is trying to grow his revenue of the business, and he's like, what if we add a service fee to this? Like, okay, we're gonna add like a kind of a confusing fee here. We call it a service fee, and it'll add another 5-10% to our general revenue on every order. People will just kind of accept this because people are loyal. These people come every single week, and they do that. They come, and suddenly now people are like looking at that that charge and be like, what is that? That's weird. Some people might ask about it. Some people might be quiet. Like I'm the kind of person who I never like mention anything, I'm like way too polite. And I have friends who would be like, hey, what the heck is this? But let's say you're a loyal customer. You're probably still going to come back here and there, or like maybe you're me where you're just like, you know what? I guess I'm not coming back anymore. But I guess I bet you maybe one or two people the whole week will throw a huge fit about this. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And if he looks at his revenue at the end of the week, he's probably going to see like, yeah, look it, we had all these customers come in as they usually do, and the revenue went up.
Right.
But those people are going to start to look for other places, and it might take a while for them to be like, I don't like coming here. Why do they keep doing this? Why are they charging me for forks and spoons? Why are they charging me for this? Why are they charging me? And they start to feel that they're not valued, right? Like I'm a loyal customer, and you're just trying to find all these other ways to charge me for the to trick me into like paying for all this money. So then weeks 4 or 5, maybe a few months down the line, all of a sudden his business is dipping. And maybe he's adding more of these things to keep up with that or whatever. But you're starting to lose those customers. And the point here is that a lot of the impact isn't always direct. It's not really easy to measure right away because we have, that reactance we've talked about. Like you have this thing that sort of builds up and then you make a change. So customers have kind of a bank account with you that they might draw from and move from. So you might not see these things happening, but the customer loyalty is really important. And that's really what ethics comes down to. Is ethics is really just about respect. Do you properly respect your customers? Yeah. And of course,
Well, this was like kind of the crux of my question, right? It's like in the short term, making all this money with extra fees or whatever, it obviously looks great, right? Because that's what, as a business owner, that's what you want. You want to look profitable. You want to see your numbers going up. And what people may not realize is sometimes there's a sort of long-term effect that can happen if they're not careful. Because I have a story very similar to yours where it was like that, where working with this marketing guy and wanting to do all these sort of, maybe they weren't explicitly dark patterns, but they definitely weren't sort of ethically clear. And it was like, we would do all this stuff and, like, certainly in the short term, the numbers would look great. They would actually look pretty phenomenal. But, if you just looked at the long-term numbers, the picture didn't look so good, And it was always, like, people trying to figure out how to, like, game it so that, you can try and do both. But it doesn't really work that way.
I feel like, unfortunately, we all have these stories because we're humans. Like, it's human nature to, like, you're trying to create the most impactful thing, to use the most impactful thing, that you think is impactful. But then and so that's why we need it to be part of our strategy, is that, like, ethical decisions will actually help guide your solutions, and solutions that will actually attract and retain loyal customers. No. You know, and because the opposite is true. Unethical decisions erode user trust and hurts your LTV, your lifetime value per customer. Right. It might, you know, again, your like monthly revenue or your that like activation rate or the click rate, right, might go up because like that's what you're measuring for. But really what matters is that like that lifetime value or your, you know, that growth number maybe. That's yeah. really what matters in the end for a business. Maybe yeah. not for the people on the ground as much. So sometimes like if you'll get, it's easier to get buy-in for these types of strategies at a, like a higher level, but even then those are the ones that, the business side is constantly focused on, you know, dialing in things that will affect those numbers. So if you can yeah. turn the conversation into those numbers, that's what's going to get people's attention and buy-in. So let's look at this as an example. Also, yeah.
I would also say that once you start the unethical side of things, it sort of forces you to progressively get even more unethical as you continue. Because the numbers look good in the short term and then get worse, you know, in the long term.
Yeah, which so then dial sort it of, up.
Yeah, you start doing more and more, like even more progressively bad things over a longer period of time to make up for it.
Yeah. And so if then we, instead of focusing on trying not to do those things because we want to, you know, then the answer is like, what should we do? And again, yeah. ethics is the answer. And this is really the crux of it all. Like this is the big perspective shift that we need to have. And let me just throw a couple examples into the fray here to really start to paint a picture of how can ethics and ethical decisions really start to drive business innovation and be a competitive advantage for a business. The first one I have is here is T-Mobile. And before you start, like, okay, you might have your own opinions about T-Mobile because it's a really large company. It's been around for a while. But yeah. I want to talk specifically just about the business strategy they had at the time that their you know that famous CEO took over. Forgetting his yeah. name at the moment. But you know the Dutch telecom wasn't, you know, that big of a player at this point. I think they had like maybe like 8th or 10th or something of the market yeah. the market share. I mean, like 10th place, not even 10% of the market, just 10th yeah. place.
And it was like AT&T and something else, right?
Yeah, like AT&T and Sprint. And Sprint were like the really, really big yeah. ones, and they had like all the market yeah. share. And so what was the strategy that the CEO came in with that blew up T-Mobile into what it is today? This is what he did. He said, okay, the competitors are, and he had worked for like those other companies for so long. So he knew what they weren't doing well. So he said, okay, they have surprise data fees, dark pattern, right? It's kind of like a sneak into basket. Hard to leave contracts, the Roach Motel. Yep. upgrade after set time. So like, for example, like you can't get a new phone until like you've been at the contract for this many times. Again, like really making it difficult to get what you really you've already paid for. And then all these hidden fees, like, oh, you went over here. Oh, you went roaming. You did this, you did that. Like they just throw fees at you all the time. And people were frustrated. It was really tough. Like, you know, texting was a problem then. You know, like you had limited text. Yeah. You had limited data on your phone at this time.
Per text.
Yeah, like imagine you like streamed a video and all of a sudden now you're over and that means you got charged. So we're not even talking about slowing down your connection or anything like that. Just they literally will charge you once you go over your data cap. And like let's say you were good and you were like very careful about your data. At the end of the month, you would lose all your that quota that you paid for, and it would just reset to like, you know, that cap again. So it was just very like aggressive, like controlling dad level of like just trying to like get you to do what they want to do and pay and all this kind of stuff. So what did T-Mobile do? That's like they kind of came up with like an ethical strategy. They obviously were thinking about it and about money and things like that. But just think about, okay, let's do the opposite of the unethical things and create that as a business strategy. So this is here he is, John. Ledger, I think. Leger? I don't know. I forget how to pronounce his
Leger.
Name. Leger. Yeah. Yeah, Leger. I don't know. Our strategy is to turn T-Mobile into an uncarrier, essentially the opposite of every other mobile company. Right? So literally the whole strategy that blew this company up, allow them to like kick the butts of the other, you know, carriers for a long, long time. Like literally now they just all like have gone on board with a lot of these things that were brand new, and they just skyrocketed in growth. And the reason, they did was say like, hey, here's all the dark patterns and bad things you all are doing. And we'll just not do those things. We'll just do what's right for the customer in those cases. And that was their strategy. Hey, okay. They did data fees. No data fees. Unlimited data. Okay. Hard to leave contracts. Okay. We're going to do no contracts. Upgrade after a set time. Okay. You can upgrade anytime. Okay. Hidden fees. Yeah. Okay. We're going to do no roaming and no overages. So that was literally all they were doing. And they rolled this out one after another, and it got like huge press. Why would not doing something give you huge press? Right. It's because everyone was frustrated. Everyone had this like pent up anger, and they were like more than willing to jump ship for a company that was not doing those things. Now we have like unlimited data on all these things, and like a lot of companies have kind of come up to par with this. And that was part of their strategy. And now, you know, they went from like, you know, one of the lowest people in the food chain for these telecommunication businesses to like, now they're the second largest. They have $40 billion in revenue, and they just had like insane growth in such a short amount of time in a business sense.
Yeah. And as you said, it forced the competition to basically change all their plans to match.
Yeah, because you can't keep up with that as another business. Yeah. Like if you're disrespecting your users and you're bullying them, of course they're not beholden to you. They can take their money anywhere they want, and that's why ethics is so important. And it can be a business strategy too. Okay, another example here is Apple. So Apple, again, you know, a big company, a lot of history, a lot of everything. Yeah. We're talking specific strategies here. A lot of other competitors and things like that, they would, track and gather as much personal data as possible as part of their strategies and their growth. They would do like, you know, machine learning type things on the device, for example, with your identity or face or your like fingerprint scanning. At the very beginning, a lot of this was being done on the cloud by other competitors. It was being done on the cloud. And then, oftentimes, you know, getting permissions from apps, downloading apps from the App Store, a lot of other competitors were just, you know, bundling all the permissions like, hey, do you accept? And they said yes. And the user wasn't really aware of what they were giving access to the apps. And then lastly, they could use the login info from all these other apps, but they had no idea like all the information and all the things that were being shared with this third party when they would log in with their account info. Yeah. So in general, you know, a lot of companies really focusing on personal data, even though they have like full consent from the user, but in a maybe an unethical, like a dark pattern type way. And here Apple's like, okay, let's create a strategy out of that, right? Instead of trying to track as much data as possible, they try to track as little data as possible. And they also kind of decided that, okay, privacy is going to be one of the things that we market our whole like device strategy around, right? It's all about privacy. It's like the exact opposite of what the other company's weakness is, right? Their unethical piece. They do the machine learning type stuff on device. Instead of doing it in the cloud where it could be hacked and like some of that really important information around like your facial, you know, identification and fingerprints and like passwords and things, instead they're going to do that on device because, it's more secure that way. You have to hack each device, by itself. Bundling all of them together, you know, they were the ones who said, okay, hey, so-and-so app wants access to your microphone, to your photos, to your contacts, specifically what it is and why they need it. Somewhat recently, they also had like, okay, hey, you can log in with your Apple ID, but you can also hide your email and all your information from this service. Okay. So they created a strategy around, okay, what are some of the things that other competitors are not doing, not doing like ethically, and let's create something that we feel is more ethical. And that's something that your competitors have to completely change to like catch up to you on. So again, a strategy that's completely structured around doing the right thing. And it has been working for them. A lot of companies are changing. So an example from here is that Facebook, right? What did we see recently? a few months ago, I can't say exactly how many months, maybe like less than 6 months ago, Apple came up with, they required apps to have users opt in to tracking.
Yes.
Facebook relied heavily on tracking for their advertising network on all their apps on iPhone.
Yeah.
So it turns out people don't like that. If they're actually asked explicitly and like it's clearly laid out what will be tracked, users opted out, I think around 95%. Yeah. So the earnings call this last week they lost $10 billion in ad revenue, and their stock market price has dropped dramatically, and there's a lot, some of their other numbers are down as well, and they attribute a portion of this, a rather large portion of this, to that change. Like, hey, you know, we're essentially like on a, because you know Apple and Google generally have 50% each, and it's not exact. So that's a huge amount of market share for a company to lose immediately. And so their, you know, Facebook strategy was too heavily based on something unethical. And so as soon as that changed, they couldn't keep up. They couldn't compete, and they're going to have to figure something else out and to get that back up to where they wanted to be. They're probably not going to disappear, but that's a huge, huge hit. Like a year's worth of growth has been wiped from the stock in the past day or two. And so this is a really important piece, right? And then you have Apple, who's now really just focusing heavily on that as a strategy of like not to necessarily hurt other companies, but like, hey, let's continuously do what's right for the customer, and that will be our competitive advantage.
Well, and if you think about it too, right, like it's not just in the United States, but there's the GDPR in the EU, there's other concerns across the globe around data privacy and consumer protection. So they're, in a way, Apple's just trying to comply with a lot of these rules and not have to create, weird versions of software for particular markets and things. And what's also interesting is I was reading something today where Facebook is talking about the revenue hits are going to be ongoing. Right. Like it's not just a one time deal that, this change happened and it's not just going to happen once. It's an ongoing decline in revenue because of this change. And that's what's really getting them worried, because as you mentioned, like they've been relying on the fact that they can just basically siphon off all kinds of data off your device without you knowing it. And now that this is, not the case anymore, they're going to have to figure out what it is to be a profitable business.
Totally. Yeah. And as we start to, pitch ideas within a company, you can start to see that it's not just about like, hey, we need to implement this, this landing page and we don't want to use any dark patterns. It can be like, hey, how can we position our product to be more ethical than our competitors? Mm-hmm. And it's not about being defensive anymore. It's about an offensive tactic, ethics being an offensive tactic to say, okay, hey, we are going to treat our customers so well that they become loyal. We can look to our competitors to see what their weaknesses are in this ethical area and use that as a spark for innovation to say, okay, hey, wow. Let's say you sell like sprockets or whatever the default example is, and you have a website for that. And there's, the other companies sneaking into Baskin and doing all these things, and you've been doing it too. But now you can kind of create that and say, okay, hey, we, you know, charge no hidden fees. You know, like that became a marketing piece for T-Mobile for a long time. Of like, hey, we don't do this. We don't, just telling the people the things they don't do can be a strategy. But also, not just that. In the terms of like accessibility, for example, it can also be a way to drive innovation. Like if you're, in a team brainstorming, and you're starting to think about what you want to build, having some of those guidelines around, ethics, let's say, wanting to treat users well, wanting to include as many people as possible through accessibility and anti-bias things. And you create that as part of that forming process of ideas, those ideas will get better and they will go places that your competitors aren't thinking about. So accessibility is such a great example of that, because so many major innovations have actually come from people brainstorming about solving accessibility problems. Captions is purely for accessibility in the beginning, but so many of us use captions in a daily basis. You need to watch a video without, the audio on.
Sound.
Yeah. You need to translate it. SEO needs to see what's going on in there. It's just very, very helpful. SEO, like all the search and a lot of the metadata originally was, a lot of that extra stuff layers were added for, screen readers in the beginning. The one I use very often is zooming in on a web page and like making sure that works yeah. well. Maybe the text is too small, making the text a accessible size, things like that. And there's so many examples here. I'm just going to like start firing off a bunch. Okay. It's like, shortcuts, gestures, if you have power users, like those are going to be really important if you have the right shortcuts, but it's accessible as well. I mentioned small text, hard to read contrast, with text gives you a headache, or maybe you can't see it in the light. Or it's just like more cognitive load to understand. SMS was originally developed for someone to communicate with their blind loved one. And now we use it on our phones every day. Autofill password managers, trying to find and click the tiny X on pop up on your phone. Siri and Google Assistant, like those voice activated things were originally R&D for accessibility. Whether a button is disabled or not, and whether you can click it, that's an accessibility issue, but it's also a usability issue. The automatic door button, right? Like that's something that we all benefit from. Yep. Like you're carrying groceries or, you're carrying something and you want to be able to get into the store. And as well as, they call it, actually, this is where this whole category of things has gotten its name, is the cut curb effect. Because in, after the Vietnam War, there was a lot of veterans and they needed to be able to wheelchair down the curb to the street to cross. And so they cut the curbs and now everybody benefits from that, right? Like you probably walk down there versus somewhere else because it's easier. Or, especially if have a stroller or you're carrying something or whatever it is, like a lot of people benefit, bikes benefit from that. Mm-hmm. Ramps and keyboards, text to speech, the chair swing at a park. My son loves that one. And it's also accessible, which is really cool. The crosswalk beeps, I've had so many conversations I'm like, oh, it's time for us to turn. It's time for us to go, right? Yeah. It just improves the experience. Beach ramps, getting your stuff down to the beach instead of trudging through the sand. That also helps.
Or stairs.
The OXO brand, they started as like, the mother had like a really bad arthritis and you wanted to design something that was like not painful for her to use. And it became like, it turns out that everybody wants something that's easy to use and ergonomic. And their whole brand started off as a huge, huge business now. Segway started as a tech for accessibility. Eye tracking software, now we use it for a lot of studies and things like that. But again, that started as an accessibility thing. So the list just goes on and on and on and on. There's so many amazing innovations that can happen and just overall improvements that can happen when you're thinking about how we can improve and innovate on accessibility. But the same thing about ethics. You know, if we're talking about, okay, hey, what happens when a user passes away on our social media platform? And you start to think about that. You never would have thought about that before. And suddenly you have this amazing feature. Somebody passes away. Everyone can kind of come together and experience this page and connect and all the right things that are protected from that person and whatever it is that needs to happen. That's really special. You know, I remember also seeing, you know, when Tumblr was in its heyday, a lot of teens were using that service. And if you had searched for something around, you know, suicidal and things like that, they had a little extra message about getting help and things like that. And the amount of loyalty and value that you can build from those things is incredible.
The Microsoft Accessible Game Controller is a new one that is... it's used for, you know, PCs and Xbox, but one of the things that they did that was really, really good of them was they made it basically usable on really any platform. So if you know how to modify the hardware, you know, you could use it on your PlayStation if you wanted to. And there's examples of people using, creating other kinds of hardware to interface with the Microsoft Accessible Controller to make it even more accessible for different kinds of, you know, disabilities that people might have so that they can, you know, control, you know, different other games. There's a famous video, I don't know if you remember seeing it, of this young girl in a wheelchair who is now able to play Legend of Zelda because of this Microsoft game controller. And she couldn't have done it before using, you know, just the default Nintendo Switch controllers. So
that's awesome. Yeah, really, and it really, really does cool open one. Up your cool top story. Of funnel as much as possible, right? Like those people have money as well, like, right? They have money to spend. Yeah. They want to experience the same things. They have the same needs as we all do. And it's the product that's inaccessible to them. And so by making the product accessible, you get more people coming in to be your customer. And so as you can start to see, like we can start to shift our mind, which, you know, it's still important to play that defense. But if we're totally missing the offense side of this equation, where ethics can become this tool that drives innovation within a business, looking at your competitors, looking at your own product and finding its weaknesses and making it a stronger product that's going to generate more loyal customers, drive more revenue and increase that LTV. Yeah, let's do that, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, to review, you know, again, we're going to try to craft better messages to when we're pitching this. So again, if I went back to that day with my, with, you know, that VP and I was trying to convince him, we could talk, I would talk more about, you know, here are the metrics we need to be tracking. Here is the kind of business we want to create. Let's not do this. Let's do this instead. Let's do the exact opposite of that. You know, I was looking at a great case study recently from growth.design. I love those guys. And, there is a free trial screen and they did an A/B test. The A test was sort of the standard fare. Like here's what the app does and it's so good. It's so good. Bye. Right.
Yeah.
The B test was, hey, you've already heard about, you know, what the product is on the previous screen. So let's talk about like, hey, we are going to, you know, we're not going to, you know, charge you without we're here. You know, here's, they actually have a timeline of like, hey, you're going to get a reminder at this date, and then we'll charge you on this date and you can cancel at any time. And it'll be, you know, it's not difficult to delete, you know, you just tell us and we'll do it. You know, it was like making it very opposite of all the dark patterns that people use of like trying to get people excited to start and then sneakily getting a charge out of them after the first month and hoping that they stick around or whatever their plan was, right? Instead, taking a totally different approach and focusing more on, okay, let's do the exact opposite of the dark pattern and tell people, you know, like we are gonna, not, we're, you know, we're on your side. We just want you to try the product and we're not gonna double charge you. We're gonna give you all these opportunities. It's again, it's still the exact same auto charge setup, right? It's not like, you know, don't, no credit card or whatever, because that changes a lot of things of, you know, with the risk and all these other things. So it's still the same type of trial. It's explained differently. That's all it is. And just making the user totally aware of like, hey, we respect you. That ended up doing dramatically better. I think it was something like, oh man, I wish I had the screen in front of me. I don't remember, like, let's say like 30% more. Okay. It did really, really well. And there's so many opportunities like that where you say, okay, hey, instead of not doing this dark pattern, what if we did the exact opposite? Because that's actually a clue that's going to lead us to a better design that's going to actually perform so much better. So I love that example because it's all compact right in there. You have the defensive, like, hey, let's not do the dark pattern. It's going to harm people. It's going to harm our brand. And it, you know, in the medium term, long term, it's going to really hurt our business. To, hey, this is actually an opportunity for us to create a business strategy, right? And say, okay, hey, let's do the most ethical thing here. Let's actually pick up on that. And most people do that. Let's do the opposite of it. And wow, it actually performs so much better. And there's loads and loads of examples out there. And you can find your own by starting to look at the ethical situations and little problems and product decisions that come up and choosing ethics as an opportunity to innovate.
Yep. Cool.
And it increases employee satisfaction. So one last little tidbit is, right,
yeah.
It's so much more enjoyable for us who have to do the work to solve the problem of, instead of like, how do I trick people into doing this, which is really draining and frustrating and nobody likes that, to what can I do that's best for the users and the customers? How can I make their lives the best possible? People really enjoy working in an environment that's set up that way and focused that way. So it also has this other driver of the business where you actually will retain more of your talent as well.
Yep. Totally.
All right. That's the gist of it. So just to recap, you know, the defense is good, but you need to add offense. Choose ethics as a spur for innovation, as a catalyst for innovation. And that's it. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Yeah. So, you know, if you like this show, if you want to support us because you really enjoy hearing us talk about these kinds of topics, you can become a regular monthly donator, and you can do that by going to anchor.fm/designreview. And all you have to do is hit the support button while you're there and then select a dollar amount that suits you. You can speaking of ethics, you can cancel it at any time.
Yep.
You don't have to do it, but it's nice to help support the show. Everything you do there, you know, we invest it right back into the operations here. So,
yeah, and if you'd like to leave us a review, you can go to iTunes, wherever else you are able to leave a review. But we read every single one of those. That's the fuel that keeps us going. So, if you're liking the podcast right now, you're like, that was pretty good, head over and leave us a review. Also, you can find us on Twitter. I am Design UX UI. Our podcast is dr_podcast.
And I am Machine Human. And of course, there is mentorship available to you. If you have questions about, you know, your career or whatever, or if you want to talk about, you know, ethical design and how to handle difficult situations around ethics, I would encourage you to go visit officehoursproject.com, where you can go on there and find somebody to talk to who's working in the field. So, yeah. Yeah, this was an awesome show. Ethics is it's so important to, you know, basically everything. It's surprising to me that it doesn't get discussed like all the time.
I mean, yeah, it's like,
but
it's the day in and day out work we do has deals with it. So it's like, yeah. Thanks so much for hanging out on the show with us. We hope you learned something today. Hopefully it was useful and productive use of your time. We'll see you again in probably 2 weeks, and we'll see you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now.